The Honourable Member of Parliament, distinguished guests, notably Susie Macri, as President of the European Network of Fibromyalgia Associates, EMFA, and Professor Stephen Bevan, welcome, University of Lancaster and Institute, also of the Employment Studies. Ladies and gentlemen, it is indeed an honour to welcome you at the House of Representatives, Parliament of Malta, for this very important meeting, which we are holding today on social inclusion of what we refer to as invisible disabilities. The main objective of this gathering in Parliament is to give a helping hand from here, together, to patients with hidden disabilities, such as patients of ME, CFS, and fibromyalgia. Furthermore, we wish that through this conference, the people of Malta become even more aware of the needs of the patients in this type of chronic pain. I switch a little bit to the Maltese language because we are live on the parliamentary channel, and I know that this conference is going to be followed, but we will have the proceedings in the English language, of course, in order to ensure that every one of us is participating, including our foreign speakers. Nati merħba l-kulħat l-edina unek fil-parlament fejn għanna wkoll il-beneficju li diskutu fl-imkien dak li referu għalihom bħala disabilità invisibbli. Referu għal dak il-pazjenti li għandhom kondizzjonijiet li wieħed jirreferi għalhom bħala ME, CFS u fibromyalgia. Dan il-Parlament qiegħed hawnhekk u qegħdin hawn ukoll biex intkom min għandu kondizzjoni, min qiegħed hawnhekk jipparteċipa mal-membri tal-Parlament. Min naħat tal-żewġ naħat tal-Kamra. Flimkien niddiskutu x'jista' jsir biex ikonna azzjoni nazzjonali aktar b'saħħitha biex tindirizza dawna il-problemi li għandna fil-pajjiż ta' dat tip ta' kondizzjonijiet. Jiena mill-informazzjoni li għandi hija li ġeneralment il-popolazzjoni qiegħda li bejn 2 u 3% ikollhom xi tip ta' waħda minn dal-kondizzjonijiet. Jista' jkunu iktar. U allura huwa importanti li naraw l-servizzi li qed offruti fis-saħħa huma adekwati. Jew aħjar naraw li jittiebu, għandna fjeni konna kliniċi apposta ad hoc għal dan tip ta' kondizzjonijiet, anka fuq dawk li il-pazjenti li għandhom dil kondizzjoni u il-kondizzjoni ta' xogħol tagħhom. Il-liġi kifin illum. Hija dwar drittiet tal-ħaddiema fuq il-postijiet ta' xogħol. Min għandu dil kondizzjoni? Għandu jkollu l-istess kondizzjonijiet bħal meta persuna huwa normali m'għandu l-ebda kondizzjoni, u f'dan huma xi ħaġa li wieħed irid jarhom. Ovvjament kollox qed isir minn hawn għaliex il-Parlament jgħaddi l-liġijiet hawnhekk f'dik il-mejda tal-Kamra meta jitpoġġew id-dokumenti, meta jiġi diskuss u jsir id-deċiżjoni. Jiġri hawnhekk hija opportunità unika u għalhekk kien rrid nagħmel introduzzjoni bil-Malti qabel ma neġa' niswiċċja bl-Ingliż biex min qed jarana l-poplu Malti li qed isegwi din is-seduta b'mod dirett u jkonna anka repeat, ikun jaf għalfejn tqajna hawnhekk. U tajjeb illi nkomplu b'dir konferenza biex nagħtu l-aħjar għal poplu Malti. I switch again in English for the benefit of the English speaking members. This is an opportunity, that's what I'm saying, this is an opportunity for members of the ME, CFS and Fibromyalgia Alliance, Malta, to discuss matters that concern their own well-being with members of parliament. This is what I said previously in the Maltese language. Their well-being and our well-being in a caring society, and Malta is a very caring society, but we have to also always make sure that we improve, that we are more than caring society, which is driven by the value of social solidarity. The needs and interests of the sick are considered as high priorities in the list of the general needs of the society. Now, society, and this is very important, has to acknowledge, it has to acknowledge the special needs of our fellow sick persons, or those who have a condition, in order to make sure that they are well assisted, and in order to ensure that we provide the adequate services that they require in order to improve their difficult situation. So that's why we are here. We are here in Parliament together with representatives of those who are suffering from this condition, fibromyalgia, in order to acknowledge, in order to ensure their realities. We understand exactly their realities and undertake to devise a national action plan, which I referred to previously, aimed to improve their daily lives. This is very important. It's cardinal. It's the main point. It is estimated, now we come to figures, I might be conservative in this, but it is estimated, you will of course explain to us, Mrs. Macri, about whether in Europe, it is we have about 40 million, this is the figure, 40 million, which is quite a number, that have been diagnosed with fibromyalgia disease. The WHO reports, for example, that 3% of the general population worldwide, including Malta, of course, suffer from fibromyalgia. These patients, like any other patients, are entitled by right. It's a right. They are entitled to have a good quality of life. So this right now, we have to ensure that it is going to be respected with whatever we decide also in our presentation of today's sitting. To attain these objectives, so we have the members of parliament here from both sides. We have to have a national policymaker, a medical community and others in order together to formulate what we call an action plan, which ensure that the proposals and also your proposals of, in today's sitting are indeed implemented. So in this conference today, I listed a number of heads, a number of objectives, which I hope that we will consider them. First, whether it is appropriate to extend the legal definition of persons with disability to patients with ME, CFS and fibromyalgia. In doing so, I feel that in doing so, these patients may benefit from a wider range of social assistance services already provided by the state to persons with disabilities, such as the entitlement, I give an example, in Malta, of the Blue Badge. That's one of them. Number two is another objective is in order to look about the improvement of the services offered by the present in Malta in fibromyalgia clinic. Whether the provisions of household help and community care to patients with ME, CFS and fibromyalgia is adequate. Whether we have to have better conditions, working conditions, for those who have these conditions. Special arrangements in our schools. And to ensure that the children, our children, who have this condition, do also advance in life, like the other children. We may also need to consider appropriate proposals to ensure and instill to our teachers, those who are educating our children, and the medical professions, a better understanding of fibromyalgia and other related diseases. And then, of course, I think we have to put also about the funding of research programs, because if you don't do research, you are blocked. Status quo, which are related to these invisible disabilities. And also, I think we have to consider also of the launching of the national awareness campaign about this invisible disability. Not everybody knows what to, I mean about these conditions. That's why we are here to discuss them. So these proposals, there might be other proposals, but this is what I feel that we have to go through, are intended to highlight the current situation of the patients with ME, with fibromyalgia, with CFS, and also to ensure, strongly ensure, that they are adequately assisted and cared. I strongly believe that we together, you can make a difference. We together can make a difference, and make a difference in the right direction to improve the quality of life, not only of the Maltese people, but also we are part of Europe, and also of the European citizens, because what we are doing today here is a unique experience for Europe. We are here in the highest institution of the land, the National Parliament, and we are giving an example to other European countries in order to have a better understanding for those who have, who are suffering from fibromyalgia and other related diseases. So I feel that we are morally obliged. We are morally obliged not only to take note of the situation here in Malta, but also to act together in a coordinated and also effective manner to realize the improvements that patients of fibromyalgia are rightfully seeking. So I stop here because we tend to talk a lot, politicians, so I have to give now the floor to the next speaker. So we start immediately by calling Mrs. Ruth De Bono, the President of the ME, CFS and Fibromyalgia Alliance Malta, to make her presentation. You stay here.
Honourable Speaker of the House of Representatives, Honourable Ministers, Members of Parliament, Ladies and Gentlemen, I have a quote that I would like to start with by Professor Stephen Hawkins, which is, "Disability need not be an obstacle to success." Thank you for inviting us here today to have our voices heard, to make known the unknown, and to try and together make history in changing the perspective of invisible disability here in Malta. In the speech, I will use all the stories that throughout these 5 years we as a board have received and heard from our members, with whom we have cried and shed tears and shared words of comfort, with the hope of bringing consolation to their grief. I will depict the tragedy, the misfortune, the worry and the anguish, uncertainty and distress, and misery we as sufferers go through when sickness hits us. Together with us today, we have brought our fellow companions from Europe who suffer like us, and who would like to share their expertise with the hope that despite our country being small, we can together make big changes in the lives of those who suffer in silence. The reason why I was one of the pioneers of this alliance was because I always felt the need, since my sickness at a very young age, the importance of having support from those around me, from the medical professionals, but also from the government. Do not think that these experiences you will hear today are exaggerated or untruthful. This is the reality of men and women go through every day. This is why we are here today, because there is need for change to be addressed where invisible disabilities are concerned. And now I want you, parliamentary members, to think back to the very first day you felt it in your heart that you wanted to make a change, that you wanted to be the change, that day you decided that you can improve the lives of others by being a politician. That same feeling I have always had since forever is that I always wanted to help others, especially when I knew that I was different. That is why we are here today, to make this change possible. I would like to start by discussing with you, honourable members of House of Representatives, the reason why, as an alliance, we are asking that fibromyalgia and myalgic encephalomyelitis, which I will refer to as ME, be recognised as disabilities by this government. There are still uncertainties where CRPD recognises us as disabled, and therefore one can apply for the blue badge, which I might add, some of our members are being refused for reasons unknown to us. Those who are accepted usually have comorbidities, which might be the reason why the board doctors are more convinced that they need the blue badge. However, where social security is concerned, fibromyalgia patients are still not on the list of disabilities and therefore cannot benefit from pensions. Some ME sufferers have been accepted due to the obvious disabilities this illness carries with it, and some not. It seems to us that there is no clear guidance on how one has to apply and which channels to go through. We are against abuse, and no one wishes to apply for disability for the mere pleasure of being considered disabled. Each individual feels that they cannot continue to live in this misery and pain, and therefore they need some kind of help. We all know that with the amount of money received through pensions and allowances, one cannot say to be living the life of a king. In countries like Europe, this is already possible, where one can be boarded out and apply for disability pension or invalidity pension. We are aware that this happens in Malta for other illnesses. However, when we mention fibromyalgia or ME, we are faced with queries and problems since we fall under no list. I would like to get into the fact that this has already been discussed since the setup of the NGO 5 years ago next Sunday with Honorary Minister Fern and Honorary Dachelis here present. Fibromyalgia is the second most inflicting disease after arthritis. The World Health Organization put fibromyalgia on its own as an illness in the ICD-10 under the code M79.7, which became effective in October last year, 2017. Same with ME, which has been put under the code of M93.3. This means that they are billable, specific under the ICD-10, that can be used to indicate a diagnosis for reimbursement purposes. In Spain, there was a court case where fibromyalgia was declared a permanent disability. In Ireland, it is also considered as a chronic condition which can lead to disability. We as an NGO are all out against any kind of abuse of the system, and therefore we ask the government to discuss with us measures where we come to a solution and the sufferer who is genuinely sick benefits from these measures. Let us not forget that the longer we take to make a decision, the longer the trauma for the sufferer to the detriment of his health. Now I'm going to speak about the abuse. Without making too much time, Mr. Speaker, I wish to bring today an argument why there is a great need for the sufferer to be given sickness benefits. We all know how vulnerable one becomes when sick. We feel emarginated and alone. We have had many cases where the husband leaves his wife, or vice versa, for she is too sick to keep on having a healthy relationship. Some are not ready to step in when there is need. We have other cases where the afflicted have to stop working, which means one less income for the family. This puts the family into the dangerous spectrum of poverty. We also have husbands who keep their wages to themselves, depriving their wives of any financial sustainability to buy her own medicines or access therapies. We have single parents who were faced not only with the sickness and with the breakdown of a relationship, but also facing everyday life on their own, bringing up the kids with all the expenses and facing their new reality. We also have single persons who are sick, yet they are expected to take care of their parents, since their siblings do not understand that they need care themselves. This is what each and every family inflicted with fibromyalgia and ME go through. These are the consequences when suffering from an invisible illness. No one understands you. Thanks to this government, fibromyalgia has been put on the Schedule 5 with two different types of medicines. We, however, wish that more medicines will be made available for both conditions under the POIC scheme. I am talking mostly about pregabalin and duloxetine. These medications are already being given out for other illnesses. Last but not least, we are grateful that the law for medical marijuana has passed. We are now faced with endless bureaucracy of filling papers and doctors' visits to hopefully obtain what was previously obtained through the mail. We do understand that abuse needs to be abhorred. However, let us not overwhelm the patient with too much running around to obtain a herb which was previously sold over the counter. Let us remember that if we really and truly want that disabled persons reintegrate themselves back into the workforce, we also need to implement necessities for them to be able to do so. Thank you for hearing our pleas. I ask you to be patient and hear our proposals and stories, which I'm sure would help you understand better our situation.
Thank you. Mrs. Davon. Thank you very much. Now I call Mrs. Susie Macri as President of the European Network of Fibromyalgia Associations, Europe. You've got the floor.
Honourable Speaker of the House of Representatives, Honourable Ministers and Members of the Parliament, ladies and gentlemen, dear friends, I wish to express the gratitude of EMFA Board and myself personally for your kind hospitality today and for your willingness to listen to the challenges faced by the European fibromyalgia patients. EMFA is a European non-governmental, non-profit-making organization registered in Belgium and which was officially inaugurated in December 2004 in London. The organization was supported then by the UK, Scotland, Netherlands, Switzerland, Denmark, Norway, France, the United Kingdom, and Scotland. Fibromyalgia affects an estimated, as you well said, Mr. Speaker, 14 million people in Europe. It has a devastating impact on those who suffer from the disease and also for those carers and families who are trying to support them. Also, it imposes a large economic burden on society and the individuals. The mission of EMFA is to promote fibromyalgia awareness to politicians, physicians, scientists, and the general public on a European level, and join forces with the national and regional organizations in Europe to make our voice stronger and more effective. Some of the actions and achievements of EMFA. Fibromyalgia has been recognized by WHO as a disease since 1992, as mentioned in the list ICO-10-M-79-7, even though it is still questioned by a number of medical professionals and some health authorities. Fibromyalgia is an invisible condition which is characterized by chronic pain and many symptoms like morning myoacapsia, morning stiffness, sleep disorder, general tiredness and fatigability of muscles. On December 16, 2008, the written declaration 69/2008 about fibromyalgia reached the quorum to be accepted by the European Parliament. This acceptance meant that the first but important step on a long way to get fibromyalgia recognized in all European countries has been taken. The awareness of the condition of fibromyalgia by the members of the European Parliament could be an example for national politicians for actively addressing their national governments. ENFA and their members are more than willing to support such activities. The written declaration stated that in Europe, 14 million people are affected. The reality of this situation, which affects all European countries, is that the right of people affected by a chronic disease to have a good quality of life is being ignored. It is therefore called on the medical community, national and European policymakers, the following: to fight against the scepticism around this disease, to improve the quality of patients' lives, to put in place an individual and interdisciplinary support program which allows the patient to stay economically and socially independent and further avert any form of isolation, to ensure in-depth training of this subject in the mandatory courses of medical experts and medical professionals, to support and assist awareness programs that will facilitate early diagnosis and early treatment, as well as access to care at any time. Let's not forget, Mr. Speaker, that a lot of people are still undiagnosed in Europe, which makes the problem bigger. To allocate the adequate aid for scientific research against this pathology, to put in place an EU program on the exchange of best practices on fibromyalgia. ENFA conducted a survey in 2008 together in cooperation with a pharmaceutical company. The survey showed the following, I'm highlighting. Fibromyalgia symptoms are destructive and can negatively impact patients' quality of life. Fibromyalgia can have a significant financial consequence for patients. Receiving an accurate fibromyalgia diagnosis often takes a very long time. Physicians find fibromyalgia difficult to diagnose. In 2017, we placed to the Commissioner some questions through the Cypriot member of the European Parliament, Mr. Takis Hatzigeorgiou. We've asked, if the Commission has developed, and if not, why, as a strategy for recognition of fibromyalgia, a strategy for recognition of fibromyalgia as a disease which is debilitating and can cause disability. Which actions have been adopted in order to raise awareness among health professionals, patients and the public? Why aren't the member states encouraged to promote early diagnosis and treatment? And the answer was, as stated in Article 168 of the Treaty Union of the Functioning of the EU Members of the EU, member states are responsible for the definition of their health policy and organisation and delivery of health services and medical care, including in relation with the fibromyalgia. We are all aware of that. Therefore, the Commission will not be in a position to increase awareness among European countries or exploring ways in which the disease can be managed as such. However, as regards action taken already by the EU on fibromyalgia, under the 7th Framework Programme for Research, the EU supported the research project CLORIA, which you can visit online, with €6 million to investigate the pathophysiology of chronic pain conditions, including fibromyalgia. Furthermore, the latest call for proposals within the Innovative Medicines Initiative, deadline 19th October 2017, focuses on developing better biological markers and understanding chronic pelvic pain. Horizon 2020, the EU Framework Programme for Research and Innovation, 2014-2020 provides further opportunities for supporting fibromyalgia research, including for better diagnostics and care. So there are some opportunities for research which must be known and encouraged. The WHO classification change, as Ms. De Bono referred earlier, in 2017, and has classified fibromyalgia under ICD-11, chronic primary widespread pain, which is very important. At least chronic pain is recognized, as you well said, as a disease of its own right, and fibromyalgia is under that. The meeting of the Council of the European Union on Employment, Social Policy, Health and Consumer Affairs, held in Brussels on the 16th of June 2017, under the leadership of the Maltese Presidency. During the meeting, the health ministers have agreed that it is time to evaluate access to treatment for patients with chronic pain while recognizing the need to maintain the balance between innovations, availability, and accessibility and affordability. Today, we are here to support the Maltese patients and strengthen their voice in asking you to consider recognizing ME and fibromyalgia as disabilities. Let us work together to support patients and enable them to stay active at the workplace, but also in the social environment. Let us join forces, create an effective dialogue and collaboration between all stakeholders to exploit research opportunities and do whatever is necessary to stand by the Maltese sufferer and their families. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Margrethe, and thank you for your presentation, detailed exposition of this important subject, and to have a clear recognition of fibromyalgia. And now I call Professor Stephen Bevan from the University of Lancaster and the Institute of Employment Studies in the United Kingdom in order to make his presentation. You have got the PowerPoint, so you can address from here. To address also on the better working conditions or to patients with these type of conditions. Professor Bevan, you've got the floor.
Okay. So, Honourable Speaker of the House of Representatives, Honourable Members of Parliament, ladies and gentlemen, it's a great honour to be here. Thank you very much for inviting me. This is a really very important topic. Also, a note, as a researcher, your call for more research, which I think I strongly support, but that's what researchers always say, obviously. I'm going to speak to you about specifically about employment of people living with chronic and fluctuating conditions such as ME, CFS and fibromyalgia. And I'm going to talk to you about this on the back of quite a lot of research that I've done across Europe and indeed globally, looking at the barriers that people living with fluctuating conditions face. I work at the Institute for Employment Studies. I'm also an honorary professor at Lancaster University. We're a not-for-profit organization, and I've done work looking at a whole range of fluctuating conditions, many musculoskeletal conditions, cancer, schizophrenia, rheumatoid arthritis, multiple sclerosis, and so on. And there are a number of different features which all of those conditions share if we're trying to support people who are living with those conditions and if they want to work to remain active in the labour market. And I'm also the chief investigator of a very large randomised control trial in the UK, which is trying to help people who are unemployed with these conditions to get back into work. So we'll be putting perhaps 10 or 14,000 people through this trial in the UK over the next 2 years. So it's a very significant piece of work. Now let's have a look at the way that the world of work is changing, which might strengthen our resolve to try and improve outcomes for people living with these conditions. First, we know that across Europe, after a very bad time over the last decade or so because of the financial crisis. Unemployment was very high. In some member states, GDP growth is growing, employment rates are growing. But even in those circumstances, many EU citizens who are living with chronic and fluctuating conditions still get left behind in the labour market. So even in relatively benign labour market circumstances, the people who are perhaps often at the end of the queue are those people living with chronic conditions. And that's something that we really need to deal with urgently. And of course, as the workforce across the European Union ages and will retire later because of pension challenges, it will be economically and socially and clinically important to support people with chronic conditions to remain active in the labour market if they want to work. And we know that there are over 100 million EU citizens who are living with chronic musculoskeletal pain, adding to the number that Susie was quoting as well in terms of fibromyalgia. And so this is not a trivial issue. This is not a minority pursuit. This is a very large number of people and their families who are dealing with the consequences of either underemployment or unemployment and barriers to work. In terms of, I'm going to talk about ME and CFS first and then fibromyalgia in terms of what the research is telling us. ME and CFS can have really very damaging impact on both the quality of life and employment prospects. Fibromyalgia is one of the most prevalent chronic and fluctuating conditions with significant employment consequences, and that's why we're here. Both of them can have what we call a life course impact. So if you happen to have a diagnosis of these conditions when you're young, it will affect your education, it will affect your transition into employment, it will affect your ability to sustain employment and the success you have in your career. And that's something that lasts throughout your whole life, and that has not just social consequences and clinical consequences, but clearly financial consequences as well. What do we mean by fluctuations? There are lots of different definitions. Here's one, which I won't read to you, but was put together by the Multiple Sclerosis Society in the UK. I guess what this says is that they are characterised by lots of variation, and they're very individual. And they have big impacts on activities of daily living, people's ability to work and sustain work, but also in extreme cases, their ability to live independently. And this is something which is very difficult for example, employers to understand, because as we've heard, and as is the theme of this morning, many of these conditions are invisible, and people, as an employer, it's very hard to conceive of these conditions as a traditional health condition that is visible and which you can understand. So they're very individual. They're not the same for everybody. They vary enormously. So they follow a non-linear path. So, for example, if you break your leg or have a fracture, we know that the path to recovery is pretty predictable and that after a period of 6 to 8 weeks, you may be able to work again. And that's the same for almost everybody. But with a fluctuating condition, it's not linear. You may have periods where you feel very well and then you have a setback, or you're hit by fatigue, or you have chronic pain, or you have depression. And so there's not a linear path. And if you're an employer trying to support someone to remain in work, that can be very difficult and confusing. And we need more information, more awareness, and also to empower individuals living with these conditions to be able to communicate effectively with their employers so there's a clear understanding about how this works. Many of these conditions have no obvious cure, and so they need to be managed effectively. And we're finding this too in other conditions. So, for example, an increasing proportion of people with cancer are surviving and are going back to work, and we're having to deal with how we manage those conditions in the workplace. In many ways, employers catastrophise these conditions and think, can this person work? Surely if they have this condition, they have to leave the labour market. And our conventional thinking about this has to change. People living with these conditions can work, they want to work, and they can be very productive. We know they're invisible, we know they're unpredictable, and they have chronic and often long-term symptoms that last a very long time. And so we need to overcome some of our preconceptions about what illness at work looks like. And for these invisible conditions, that's particularly a challenge. In terms of ME and CFS, We need to do more to promote awareness at work. One of the challenges we have is we don't have very good data, for either for fibromyalgia or for ME and CFS. And that's partly because we have real difficulty capturing the data, people coming forward, people feeling willing to disclose, and the problems in diagnosis. So the prevalence rates for these conditions in Western countries vary enormously between 0.2% and 1% of the population. But actually accurate statistics on this are very elusive. And you find in some countries, for example, in the Far East, the prevalence rates are much higher. They can be characterised by chronic and prolonged impaired function, both physical and psychological function, that can't be alleviated often by rest. And they're associated with lower quality of life, higher healthcare utilisation, and increased welfare support, and also, of course, lost work productivity. So you can look at this in a purely economic sense as being a very big cost, both to society, the economy, and, of course, to individuals as well. There are a number of soft consequences of ME and CFS in terms of poor and late diagnosis, stigma, unwillingness to disclose, and all of this, of course, can impair people's access to early intervention and support. And, of course, if you get early intervention, you're more likely to feel more able to manage your condition and feel you're getting the support and recognition of your condition that you feel you deserve. Most of the economic estimates of both fibromyalgia and CFS and ME only take into account what we call the direct costs, so the costs of healthcare. But in many cases, we find that the indirect costs, in terms of lost productivity, the impact on family members and their ability to work, can be sometimes four times as high. So when looking at the overall economic costs, we need to factor in both direct and indirect costs if we're going to get an accurate picture of the overall effect of these conditions on the economy. In the UK, there are some estimates that productivity losses per person per year can be almost £23,000, and that's in some cases likely to be an underestimate. So very significant economic consequences. For fibromyalgia, very similar characteristics. There are some aspects of work that can make fibromyalgia very difficult to work with. So jobs that require repetitive movement or static work or heavier physically demanding work, power gripping, heavy workloads with low control over the pace and the sequence in which you do your tasks. And there are a number of comorbid conditions as well, so having poor sleep or anxiety can also damage your productivity and your attendance at work. Many people living with fibromyalgia report leaving work or reducing their hours, both before and after diagnosis, and as few as 50 or 55% of people feel able to continue full-time work. So it's not right just to think about whether people are employed or unemployed. It's whether or not they're being as productive as they can be and want to be at work, or whether they're having to reduce their hours as a result of their conditions, even though they would like to work or indeed financially need to work for much longer. The average days of absence for people with fibromyalgia can be 30 per year, and between two or three times more lost productivity resulting from sickness absence than their healthy colleagues. And the annual productivity costs are linked to symptom severity. But of course, it's really important that we don't just take a narrowly economic view of this. The biggest financial burden is not borne by the taxation system or the welfare system. It's borne by families and the individual, by far. So we need to do more to improve the work culture and working conditions if we're going to make progress here. This is my final slide. We need to do more to diagnose these conditions early and give people the support and the treatment that they need in order to live independently and feel they're getting the support that they need and the recognition they need. Doctors need to see good quality work as a clinical outcome of their care and recognise that in some circumstances work can have therapeutic benefits. We have to recognise that being at work is not just an economic act, it's a social act. Being at work with supportive colleagues and supportive managers can be incredibly beneficial for people. It's about social inclusion. It's about productivity at work. It's about work being something that, which is a social activity that we all benefit from. And also, we shouldn't just expect people living with these conditions to be grateful they have a job. They should have equal opportunities for progression and career development and access to learning and development opportunities. So that's a really important thing. We shouldn't just be satisfied with by being in work. It's the quality of that work that's important. We need workplace support, flexibility and adaptation so that people can avoid stigma and encourage disclosure. Most EU member states have some form of legislation that requires employers to make reasonable accommodations for people with chronic conditions so they can continue to work. My experience is that most member states do not enforce this legislation very clearly, and we need to do more to make sure that if that legislation is in place, that it's, that employers understand they have to comply with it for the benefit of patients. Policymakers need to recognise the specific needs of working age citizens with fluctuating conditions and fatigue. We need to focus on what people can still do rather than what they can't do. If we take a very negative perspective on this, then all we see is someone who has a bunch of symptoms, which means they can't do things. And that's as important for those people living with the condition as those people helping to support them. So focusing on capacity rather than incapacity is a really important way of thinking, a lens through which to think about employment and chronic conditions. And then finally, self-management is really important. What we don't want to happen is we have doctors, employers, policymakers doing things to patients. It has to be participative. The voice of the patient is really important. The best person to know how a workplace can be adapted to suit the needs of the individual is the person themselves. They should be in the lead in this situation because they know what they can do and they understand how they can contribute to the organisation. So people living with ME, CFS and fibromyalgia have had to demonstrate, and many of you in the room have had to demonstrate, strength, resilience, resourcefulness and determination to navigate the challenges of everyday life. All those qualities are ones which employers say they want in all their employees. So why would they not want you in their workplace? Having demonstrated those incredible qualities, why is it still so difficult for people living with chronic conditions to play a full part in the labour market? So it's up to clinicians, policymakers and employers to ensure that we try to make sure that the labour market and our workplaces are more inclusive and welcoming for those living with these complex and invisible conditions. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Professor Bevan. Thank you very much. You gave us a very strong enlightenment of how we have to consider better working conditions and about the good practice. I'm surprised with the comment you said about the members, some members of the EU that are not enforcing the, it's something that we have to look in, that are not enforcing the legislation. Well, now I will call Mrs. Rebecca Camilleri, who is a single ME sufferer, in order to address us about the poverty and the need of teleworking and work from home and employment related rules. So you've got the floor.
Honourable Speaker of the House of Representatives, members of the Parliament, ladies and gentlemen, I will be speaking on behalf of Ms. Rebecca Camilleri. To understand our request, you must first understand our story. I often wonder what life would be of me today had fibromyalgia and ME not hit me at such a young age. I have always been an ambitious, hyperactive and independent person. Started working at the age of 17 to help around the house and have my own money to spend. I like studying, yet nothing interested me as much as sports and darts. Nonetheless, I knew that I would own my little business one day and sell my creations. So I worked to make my dream come true. At one point, I even worked 3 jobs to reach my goals. Work never scared me. I was quite a workaholic, and to be honest. However, after getting sick with glandular fever, I never went back to my old self again. I started changing. The body I lived in did not belong to me anymore. I always suffered from pain from a very young age. At that time, wrongly diagnosed as growing up pains. And as we all know, there is no such thing as growing up pains. I also suffered from horrible headaches, but none of this ever stopped me. This time, this was different. Little did I know, it was the end of my life as I know it. I became a prisoner in a body that did not belong to me. I started pushing myself to the limit simply to get through the day. Before I knew it, I had to quit two of my jobs as I physically couldn't make it to work. A four-hour shift became too much to bear. Every morning I would throw up as my body was too weak to get out of bed. I would drive to work with a paper bag in hand just in case. Was it dangerous? Of course. Did I have a choice? I didn't. I was told that if I continued calling in sick so often, they would have to let me go. So I had to push on. I would get to work as pale as a ghost, and rather than helping me, I was told off because I looked like that and I looked too sick. At this point, I still didn't know what I had and just thought that I was overworked or still recovering from glandular fever. And all the medication I had to take had taken its toll. So when one morning I woke up temporarily paralyzed from my waist down, it was then that panic kicked in and we knew it was something much worse. You see, ME and fibromyalgia are two conditions that still have no direct tests for. One can only get diagnosed by excluding a long list of other conditions. 14 years ago, there was little to no awareness on both conditions, and it took me 10 years to get diagnosed. 10 long years of fear and abuse from doctors and workmates. 10 long years of hearing that I was stressed, I was lazy, and I just wanted attention, and that I was making it all up because I was depressed. Do you know the fear a person passes through when they know there is something terribly wrong with them, but no one knows what and blames you for it? It was only thanks to an article I read written by an ME sufferer that it all came together. And no thanks to the doctors that were meant to help me. It was truly a horrible experience to pass through to simply get a diagnosis, one I don't wish upon anyone. Yet this still happens today. ME was and still is a taboo word. So that is another point altogether. Time has passed and I am now a single 34-year-old woman with a very bleak future ahead of her. I had to give up most of my life, and even though I am not always bedbound, I am more often than not housebound. According to the ME Action and the Hummingbird Foundation for ME, 75% of ME sufferers are housebound and cannot work, and from those, 25% are bedbound. Dr. Elizabeth Dorset estimates the death rate for ME to be roughly 3%, some of which being suicide, not because they were depressed, but because they were desperate. Had proper medical care been given, some might have been avoided. Dr. Dorset goes on to say that there can be a higher percentage of deaths, but are not recorded due to them not being recorded under ME. Do you know what it feels like living with ME? Waking up every morning so weak you can barely breathe or speak. Waking up already exhausted before you even started the day. As I write this speech, my hand is cramping up and the pain I am feeling is excruciating. And I need to have breaks in between as my fingers lose sensation. Do you know what it feels like when the clothes on your skin burn and bruise you? What it feels like when your brain just cannot do the simplest of tasks, like open a door or remember a word? When you can barely walk to the bathroom because your legs give away? When you suffer from migraines so bad you wish your head off? When any source of light burns through your eyes and the slightest of noises feels like the loudest speaker directly in your ear? When whatever you eat makes you sick. And this is just a fraction of what we go through daily. To be here today with you, I had to rest all throughout Thursday. But even then, one is not sure they will wake up well enough to be present. In fact, there is a good chance someone else is going to have to read this instead of me too. Not to mention that after this, it will take me days on end to recover. But my recovery is nowhere close to what you would imagine or expect. In fact, I use the term recovery very lightly. Most importantly, do you know what it feels like to lose your life but still exist? Because we do. No one chooses to be sick. No one chooses all of this. Today, I find myself living in poverty. I slip through all the cracks of the system and get no help. I cannot buy my medications, my vitamins, or go for treatments, because I haven't got an income or financial help from the government. I live together with my mother, a 72-year-old woman who was recently diagnosed with cancer. We both cannot work and live off a minimum pension, if one can call that living. Today, we gather here not to gain your pity or your sympathy, but rather to have you all understand that at the end of the day, we only want our dignity and the chance of getting part of our old life back. In the past few years, schemes for inclusion of disabilities have been put forward, and this is a great movement for many disabilities out there. However, one needs to keep in mind that not all disabilities need the same type of inclusion and scheme, and it is time to cater for our needs. We don't ask for special treatments, just for equality and equity, and to have the same opportunities as others do. Even though my body fails me often, my mind is still sharp, and like me, many look for a way to gain some of their old life back. This normally comes in the form of work. So how can one go out to work when they can barely get out of bed? This is where the NGO puts forward the notion of teleworking, working from home. This might also help with financial struggles, even if it means working for 5 hours a week from home. We have sufferers holding postgraduate degrees and undergraduate degrees, and those who, like myself, have once worked 3 jobs and are now stuck at home wishing to work again or start work. All we know, as we all know, work is dignity, and work always gives people that push in life to feel useful and needed. It fills the emptiness at home when you are stuck 24/7 and gives you a reason to live when you have none. And studies have shown that suicidal tendencies tend to diminish too. Not to mention those who do work but struggle to keep up and are often fired due to lack of understanding of such disabilities. Yet, the importance of teleworking is still not deemed important enough, as no schemes or campaigns to promote such have started. The aim of the current scheme is to promote people with disabilities to go out for work, which is, if one can, is a great initiative. However, once again, people who cannot go out to work are ignored and discarded, and their needs are not met. One of the biggest misconceptions of being chronically ill and stuck at home is that it must be fun doing nothing all day. There is nothing further from the truth, unfortunately. Many a time, reality is far different from this. We would be stuck in bed crying in pain, or too weak to get out of bed to get anything done. This is something we are all very passionate about, as we need to change the mentality having here in Malta regarding teleworking and opportunities for people with invisible disabilities. So let us work together to bring life back to those who have lost so much already. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Familiari. Thank you for your courage in explaining vividly your personal experience. I mean, it's a clear case, a clear message to Parliament that we need to do much more. Thank you very much. Now I call Ms. Maria Gauci, Nurse ME Medical, to address the floor on the medications and therapy.
Honourable Speaker of the House of Representatives, Honourable Members of Parliament, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Maria and I have been working as a nurse for the last 26 years. Some years ago, my life changed completely and for many months of unexplained overall pain and debilitating fatigue. In the middle of many uncertainties because no one had an answer to all that I was going through. 9 years ago, I discovered that I have fibromyalgia syndrome. Fortunately, during these last years, I found a lot of support from the management and colleagues, but despite all this, a few weeks ago, I gave the notice for my resignation. This has been a difficult but important decision for me, because personally and as a family, we are paying a high price for me to keep working even for 25 hours per week. This is due to the physical, mental and emotional exhaustion that comes from the fact that one is carrying the weight of a chronic illness that takes away your strength and doesn't let you live but to exist. When I take the rest and the space that I need, I hope that in the near future I can start exploring new horizons in the adventure of my life. Today I'm going to give a brief overview of the medical aspect of myalgic encephalomyelitis and all the implications it brings in the person, the family and society in general. My means muscle, algic means pain, encephalo means brain, Myelitis refers to the inflammation of the spine and nervous system that branches out of it. In short, it is referred to as ME and affects adults and children from all walks of life. Contrary to what many used to think, research shows that ME is not a psychosomatic illness coming from the brain, but that there is a physical cause that affects the brain and the whole complex nervous system. Many times, ME comes suddenly, typically after a virus or other type of infection or physical or emotional trauma that puts extreme stress on the immune system, which will never recover. In other cases, the illness comes slowly over a period of months. Myalgic encephalomyelitis is a serious illness that is complex and debilitating as it affects all the systems in the body, and it can be very difficult and challenging for a doctor to do proper diagnosis and give some type of treatment. This leaves the patient and healthcare workers in a vicious cycle of frustration. ME is characterized by extreme exhaustion for at least 6 months and a serious decrease in the patient's ability to take part in physical and mental activities, to take proper care of himself and also to join in social and educational activities. This exhaustion is prominent especially after physical or mental activity, and the patient is not better even after rest. This is due to the fact that the body loses the capacity to make and use energy on demand as a healthy body does. We also encounter memory and thought processing problems that involve thinking and understanding when one comes to follow instructions or conversations like driving, reading, studying and sitting for exams, among others. We also find sleep disturbances, joint pains, headaches and swollen glands, sore throat and low-grade fever. The patient also has heart and circulatory problems where the heart loses the ability to beat in a regular and effective way. This causes decreased blood flow towards the brain, resulting into dizziness, especially when the patient is in a situation where one has to stand up for a long time. There is also lack of body temperature control, where the person feels cold or hot with excessive sweating, irrespective of the actual environmental temperature. We also find a high sensitivity to the processes of light and sound, chemicals and medicine. The list is never ending. The patient finds that he cannot continue to function as he used to, and quality of life decreases drastically. Even in the same patient, the level of severity of symptoms can fluctuate from time to time and from day to day. For this reason, the person is unable to do the usual daily activities in a planned and consistent manner. Many have to stop working, and affected children and youths have a problem to go to school in a regular manner and sit for exams like their peers. Some end up bedridden or in a wheelchair and unable to go out from home. The worst ones end up largely paralyzed and have to be fed special food through a tube in the stomach to continue taking essential nutrients. It is very rare that one recovers. A person can get better or get worse, where some even die due to the illness or the complications that come with it. Various studies show that ME can cause enough disability, the same as patients with multiple sclerosis, lupus and other chronic illnesses at the end stage of heart, lung and kidney disease, AIDS and cancer. The care of patients suffering from this debilitating illness causes a lot of financial, physical and emotional stress to members of the family and other members in various sectors that take an active part in their care. It has also been found that there is also a great financial loss due to lack of productivity at work, paying for medicines and other therapies that help to minimize the suffering. As a country, there is a loss due to the health and social disability benefits incurred. There is no specific treatment for ME, therefore the patient is treated according to the symptoms, especially the ones that are affecting him worst. The fact that there is great sensitivity to chemicals and medicine, there can be a serious reaction to treatment as well. Although we know that human resources are what they are, we propose that adequate protocols are set for better healthcare and explore how to improve the healthcare system in a more holistic way, both in the clinical and the community setting. It is very important to have better understanding among the whole team of the healthcare profession. It is also important to educate employers so that they can understand and allow specific adaptations at the workplace like other disabilities that show. In this way, the chance a person remains active in the working and social world is increased together with a better quality of life. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Mrs. Gauchi, well, can we discuss also the protocol for better diagnosis? I now call Mrs. Josette Sacco, who is an ME sufferer and who is boarded out, to make her presentation.
Thank you, Honourable Speaker, House of Representatives, Honourable Ministers, Members of Parliament, Ladies and Gentlemen. My name is Josette Sacco. Our illness, the ME, is a very painful and frustrated illness. Apart from being sick, it also deprives you from your family, from your work, your profession, hobbies, and also social work, and leave you penniless. When you realize that you are getting sick, you try anything in the world to stop it. But when they tell you that there is no cure, you try to find other ways to do something that will help you cope. When I got sick, I fought it as much as I could, kept on working until I realized that I had to stop as a nurse. Those long hours were killing me. I had to find something else. I started studying again, became a kindergarten assistant, and did that work for 10 years. But at the end, my consultants made me stop. It was getting worse. That was the worst verdict I had ever had. I loved my job very much, but so I had to stop. Thank you. The hustle that you have to go through to get boarded out, it's terrible, I can tell you. Certificates every week for a year. Then they call you to get to the board. Three doctors, a nurse, and they ask you lots of questions. They don't know really what ME and FM is. One of them came up to me and said, "You don't want to work anymore, eh, madam?" I promptly answered and told him, "Until a year ago, sir, I had a full-time job and two part-times. But now I can't even do my bed. I have to go, I have to have a bath on my own. I can't." If you are strong enough to go through the board, or if you are lucky enough to be accepted, then you would have some financial aid for your daily needs. However, many are not that lucky and they end up in poverty. Social help, nil. During our meetings, we hear women complaining and say how painful it is to do some housework, wash the family laundries, ironing the clothes and go shopping, the usual. The housework must be done every day. No, we can't have a housekeeper because we have to pay her. She has to be paid. Sometimes it is so hard to lift an empty pen or a bottle of 2 liters of water. You can imagine the rest. Then there are times when the disability is so acute that you can't even go to the bathroom on your own. You have to have a bath or even wear your bra. How degrading. You have to ask your husband to wash you and help you wipe your back, and even help you wear your pants. And if you are alone, you are in great trouble. Not everybody is lucky as me, where he helps me and do anything for me to make me feel better. We hear of people that they are being abused by their husbands and they can't do anything because they don't have any money to leave their houses. That's very sad, isn't it? Pills, countless. They leave us penniless. The government is giving us some pills, but there are tablets like morphine, vitamins, painkillers and more that we all take and have to buy them, as they are only given to us by the pink card. This you have to go through a means test. These pills amount to hundreds of euro a month, plus the visit of the consultant to prescribe the pills every month. Sometimes one might even have a reaction, and so the consultant tells you to stop them, and he will prescribe something else. This happened to me many times. You open a packet that costs over 100 euros, take one or two out of it, and then you have to stop and throw it away because of due of a reaction. We need a holistic approach. So a part of the pills, one also needs treatment, therapies, such as massage, psychotherapist, acupuncturists, heated pools, etc. All of these and more. Well, Mater Dei are offering like 10 sessions of such therapy. However, after that, you are left to fend for yourself. We would like to thank you for the sessions, but, well, you know, a chronic illness is for life and not for only 10 sessions. We do all this not to cure ourselves, no, but to make us feel a bit better. The disability card. You have to go to your consultant to fill up the papers they give you. You have to pay for the application. Then you have to go through another board. And if you pass, you have to go for the card yourself. If the condition is chronic, and the more the time passes, the more it worsens, why shouldn't it be forever? However, except of ME, it's rare to none. I understand that you don't understand us, because to do so, you have to have what we have. How can one judge me of my outside appearance to see what I really look like from the inside? I always give this example, a nice big red apple. But when you cut it in half, you find it rotten. That's us, my friends. I wish you from the bottom of my heart that no one gets this disability. But please, we beg you, do something. You have started, but with breaks and lots of red tape and lots of waste of time. Our clock is running out. We need them now, today. Tomorrow may be too late. With your help, we are sure that you are going to give us. This will help us live lives a bit more comfortable so that we can surpass our difficulties as we go through the phase and face them daily, and to look ahead a bit more positively. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Ms. Sacco, for your presentation. And I'm sure that what you said in Parliament definitely is to do things better. Now I call Patricia Carbonaro, mother of a fibromyalgia sufferer, to make her presentation.
Honourable Speaker, ministers and parliamentary secretaries, honourable members of Parliament, ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Speaker, I am here today as a mother of 30-year-old daughter, Sharon, who has been suffering from the condition known as a fibromyalgia for the past 15 years. She was diagnosed just 6 years ago. After years of research, doctors, appointments, professors, and countless tests, since at the time almost no one knew or even heard of this condition. The physical pain she has to endure on a daily basis has led my daughter to take a very hard but necessary decision. She had to stop working, and this has resulted in a lot of stress for both herself and us, her parents. Unfortunately, there was no way to avoid this decision due to my daughter's severe condition, which has also affected us emotionally. However, what troubles us the most as parents is the thought of what is going to happen when we are gone. Who is going to be there for our daughter? It is time for the competent authorities to take action as soon as possible and recognize people suffering from this disease as disabled to work, and also grant them the same benefits as those with permanent disabilities. Many minorities in this country has been heard, and I believe that now is the time to listen to what people suffering from fibromyalgia, ME, CFS, and others have to say. We as parents, as people who have family members suffering from such conditions, are hurt, not alone to see our daughter in bed for many months, literally in pain, but we also worried about the future of our loved ones. And thus, we are hoping that at least we can put our mind at rest, that when the time comes, we won't leave our daughter suffering all by herself, but she'll find the help she deserves and be able to find her herself. I would like to take this opportunity to thank you with all my heart for the opportunity to share this message in my daughter's name, hoping to achieve a better future. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Carbonara. We thank you for your sharing with us your important experience. Now I call Ms. Maria Spiteri, who is the mother and housewife, with her experience.
Honourable Speaker of the House of Representatives, honourable members of Parliament, ladies and gentlemen, I'm both a mother and a housewife suffering from fibromyalgia. I am one of the board members of the NGO in the role of a membership officer. Like any other mother with a hyperactive child, it was not easy taking care of my son, seeing him to school and to sport and religious activities. Since my son was also an altar boy, he had to be taken to church services every single day. In my role as a housewife, I could not neglect housework and everyday chores that needed to be seen to. This alone was very demanding, and for me, for one needed to be physically fit and energetic to cope with strenuous work, let alone one suffering from fibromyalgia. I still used to plan my day, but on many days I used to end up discarding my program, when more often than not, I used to wake up in great pain, muscle and bone, plus dizziness and great fatigue. Our condition is not visible, but I look upon it as a disability since I could not climb the stairs, lift heavy loads, or cope with particular chores. I was always depending upon help from members of my family. I used to feel inadequate, too, since I couldn't get on with life as I used to before, since such a situation could well lead to depression too. With patients need to be heard and understood as to what we suffer from fibromyalgia go through day in and day out. So we are kindly pleading for your support so that at least we could live our lives with dignity. Although a fibromyalgia clinic does exist, our members are not finding it supportive enough. A questionnaire put up both at Mater Dei and Floriana Clinic was not clear enough to some of our members. The questionnaire, which is in the form of one's health points, asks one to remark upon one's condition on that particular day. But with regards to fibromyalgia, one cannot make any predictions. So questions about one particular day are considered irrelevant for members. We do have moments when we feel that bit better than before. After having submitted the questionnaire, one has to face a board of specialists, which treats each case according to its own merits. We members find that the system is not ideal as it is not accurate enough. Questions vary from, what do you accept from our service? Or, can you cope combing your hand, your hair? Well, sometimes yes and sometimes no. A considerable time elapsed for fibromyalgia sufferer to be called in for a board hearing. And when one is referred for a fresh problem, one has to wait again for another board session. I was once referred to be seen by a psychiatrist and later by a psychologist. But alas, I only had 3 sessions with the latter, as she had to leave the island of Malta. Consequently, I had to wait another 3 months to be seen by another psychologist. According to us, members of our NGO, all this goes to show that even the Floriana Clinic leaves a lot to be desired. We need better guidance as we are suffering in silence. Some of our members have been deleted from Mater Dei list on the supposition that they will be called by Floriana Clinic. They are still waiting. Some as long as a year and some even longer. Some were referred for pool therapy at St. Luke's for 6 sessions only, when our disability is chronic and permanent. As you all can see, our condition cannot afford to wait, and very often we have to resort to private doctors and treatments. This implies a 60 euro fee, if not more. Please note that one has also to pay for one's seat at the pharmacy. Then, invariably, one has to buy the medicine prescribed by the doctor, which also is an exorbitant cost. To add insult to the jury, I am also a celiac patient who needs to keep a strict diet because I do not, this could have grave consequences on me. Expenses multiply and I had to leave work because of my disease. I do not benefit from any allowance and my husband and I have to make to do with his salary, although he had to resort to a part-time job to help us afford our facial needs. I thank you for hearing me out and I'm hoping that our plea won't fall on deaf ears. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Piteri, for explaining very clearly whether the fibromyalgia clinic is working properly or not. Thank you very much. I now call Mrs. Christabel Kutayev, a student, university student with fibromyalgia, to make her presentation.
Honourable Speaker of the House of Representatives, members of the Parliament, I'm here today to represent the youth sufferers suffering from fibromyalgia and myalgic encephalomyelitis. I'm 23 years old, having been diagnosed 4 years ago with symptoms present since the age of 8 years. At the tender age of 8 years, I started suffering from crippling anxiety, migraine headaches and digestive issues. Going to one doctor to another, no one could figure out the root cause of my anxiety and headaches. It was all blamed that it was just my character, that I was just an anxious person. Fast forward to the age of 10 and the body aches commenced, multiple visits to specialists later and nothing wrong could be found. It must be growing up pains, we were told. In reality, growing up pains do not exist. Age 16, I was diagnosed with depression and started on medications. I suffered from palpitations, chest pains, severe fatigue, post-exertion in malaise and severe cognitive impairments. I was labelled to be a hypochondriac, since when I went to hospital complaining of chest pains or headaches, nothing wrong was found. My test results were the picture of health. I was told that my depression was the root cause of all the somatic symptoms. At the age of 19, after a lot of hard work and therapy, I was able to come off my antidepressants. However, my somatic symptoms were as present as ever. This is when, after multiple visits to specialists and tests later, I was diagnosed with fibromyalgia. All of this went on while I was trying to continue my post-secondary education. You see, I've always done well in my studies, left secondary school with 10 O-levels and having never failed one examination. However, at the age of 16, cognitive issues started surfacing. I found myself struggling to remember material I had just studied, for blanking out during an exam in which material I was proficient. Last September, I finally managed to pass from the last exam required for entry into the University of Malta. I have been trying to get into the university for the past 5 years. It was during this time that I started to notice the deficiencies present in our educational system. Our system is a one-size-fits-all system, and while progress has been made in the areas of ADHD, autism and dyslexia, we are still years behind when it comes to dealing with students suffering from chronic illnesses and invisible disabilities. Currently, being a university student, it is incredibly difficult to keep up with the daily lectures. I cannot concentrate for more than 1 hour, and attending to 4 hours of lectures is near impossible without compromising my concentration and leaving me totally exhausted. Having 4 straight hours of lectures usually means that I have to go home and do nothing and rest for the rest of the day. Needless to say, this makes finding time to study an incredibly strenuous task. Not because I do not have the time, but because my health doesn't always permit me to study because of the multitude of symptoms. At times, keeping up with my health and attending to lectures is a near impossible feat, let alone adding the hours of studying needed to do well in exams. Currently, I'm getting certain access arrangements, such as extra time and doing my exams via a PC. Even though these arrangements are somewhat helpful, this is not what I need. I say I because every single person that suffers from this condition suffers from different symptoms and thus has different needs. This is where the system is failing us. Our system is a rigid, one-size-fits-all system. Our system operates on the premise of equality. But while this sounds good in theory, it is not. You see, equality aims to promote fairness, but it can only work if everyone starts from the same place and needs the same help. Equality is treating everyone the same, but lest we forget that not everyone starts at the same place and not everyone has the same needs. On the other hand, equity is giving everyone what they need to be successful. Equity appears unfair, but it actively moves everyone closer to success by leveling the playing field. My situation is the perfect example of equality in action. I, for one, get extra time in my exams, but if I cannot remember the material I studied, or I blank out, no amount of extra time is going to help me remember. This is why we are proposing a system where every chronically ill student's needs are evaluated and a plan of action to help the student is drawn up in order for the student to be on the same playing field as everyone else. We are proposing the introduction of an assessment-based system. Such a system would be of great help to me and others because our whole educational system is one where you are judged on that one day of the exam. Exam stress exacerbates our symptoms, which includes the aforementioned cognitive impairments, which will result in a poor exam performance, meaning that I will have nothing to show for all the hard work I would have done during the year. An assessment-based system, on the other hand, will give me the opportunity to show what I truly know and what I have worked so hard on. The system will obviously be made available along with other options and according to the student's personal needs. Also, in the light of this, we cannot forget our youngest of sufferers, one of which is just 12 years old. Does our state and medical professions really think that a 12-year-old wants to spend her life in agony and misery just so that she claims benefits from the state? What kind of future do our youth sufferers have without any sort of benefits, without any kind of recognition? What kind of life will they be able to lead if they are too sick to work or to further their studies? Our system is setting us and the future generation of sufferers to fail and lead a life of hardships and not push us towards success. This is a heartfelt appeal for help. Help us become active members of society. Help us be able to buy our medications and help us live and not just exist. Why should I be made to choose between jeopardizing my health for the sake of my studies or jeopardizing my studies for the sake of my health? Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much for your proposals in order to ensure that our education system does not leave anyone out of the system. Thank you very much. I now call Mr. Felix Cambry, who is a fibromyalgia sufferer and who was also boarded out.
Okay. Honourable ministers, members of parliament, ladies and gentlemen, I have been suffering from fibromyalgia for the last 35 years. It has been a very rough road. I have passed through the several stages of this condition. Fibromyalgia entered in my life unexpectedly, in the best part of it, when I was trying to build a family. I started to feel its symptoms, headaches, backaches, pain, and in the shoulders and limbs. And by the passing of time, all this pain increased. I did several blood tests, x-rays, MRIs, and all the tests result in negative. Several specialists told me that I had nothing or that it was all in the mind. Wanted to continue working for my family, but at the same time the pain was increasing day by day, and nobody understood me, because from the outside I looked normal. However, the sleepless nights were endless, and the pain wasn't just physical, but also mentally. As a man, I felt weak. I couldn't perform. And then other personal relation issues, problems, started to arise, and I suffered and cried in silence. The pain was unbearable, and I couldn't concentrate. I went 3 times to the UK for therapy, but still the pain couldn't leave me. In those days, there wasn't any help from the state, and so one had to use all his savings to try to find a temporary solution for this severe pain. After 20 years, I was diagnosed with fibromyalgia. The medicines that were available on the market did not have any effect on me. In the meantime, I continued working business as usual. It was the faith I have in our Lord that kept me going. I did not want to depend on any social benefits, although my body was becoming weaker and weaker, and my spirit kept on going, all for my family. Fibromyalgia stole my freedom. I had like an attached shadow from which I couldn't depart. I feel heartbroken and sad when I see my family suffering because of me. I try to show another face to hide my pain. In the past, I couldn't play with my kids, and that was a slap in my face. And when at work, everyone used to tell me that I look great, but it was all to keep up appearances. Not every person with special needs uses a wheelchair. And not every disability is visible. They wanted me to get boarded out, but I always refused. I objected because I wanted to keep myself occupied, because if you take off the guard, the fibromyalgia will get over you and puts you in a state of a deep depression from which it won't be easy to get out. It doesn't mean that what I was able to do, others with the same condition can do, and vice versa. Every case is unique and different. In my early years, I had my own business where a lot of manual work was involved. But as the years passed, I had to change my job, and during the last 15 years, I worked in management. To live with chronic pain for me means that every day you have to struggle and with a lot of determination try to smile and try to live life, although from the inside the pain is unbearable. Don't you think that I'm a hero? Because at times I see my life as empty, without hope and without any future. And I find myself in a never-ending rough path. Once a psychologist told me that I need to throw away all the negative and hold on to the positive, only because, although the light might be minimal, the light will always ruin darkness, no matter how dim it is. Doctors cannot really understand the physical and mental pain that we suffer, because only people who suffer from this condition can understand each other. That is why our NGO is awesome, because we are in the same situation, sharing common thoughts with mutual understanding. Our invisible condition is severe as any other visible condition. And I can add on that it is more painful, since our pain is severely chronic. Therefore, today I'm asking you, as our representatives, to help us. Please guide us in our needs. In our NGO, we have young members which their severe pain doesn't allow them to work. These people have the right for a decent living, and so should be given all the necessary benefits. Please don't ignore this cry for help. This pain should be targeted. Today, I am a pensioner, and I have always contributed towards our society. The blue badge will be a great aid for people like me to continue our journey of life. Finally, I would like to thank my wife Adriana, my rock. Together with me, she walked this painful journey day by day, trying to encourage me along the way. Together, we cried and laughed for these last 40 years. Thanks also goes to Ms. Ruth Tabono, Ms. Rebecca Camilleri, and Ms. Maria Spiteri for their constant work in our NGO. I would like to thank you all for sparing me your precious time to explain fibromyalgia. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Scambri, for your unique experience which you gave us here in Parliament. I can assure you that whatever you said is a clear message for the legislatures to ensure that all the assistance will be given. Now I call Mrs. Antoinette Camilleri. You got the floor.
Honorary Speaker of the House of Representatives, Honorary Ministry, Parliamentary, ladies and gentlemen, I wish they were so... Thank you. I wish that there were so many people to address to, but unfortunately only a few could have made it, and I thank them for coming here and give us their time to hear our problems. I'm not going to speak about what they go through, because a lot has been said. I'm going to base my speech on the financial difficulties, or rather the lack of finance, that some families go through because the condition of fibromyalgia and ME is not recognized as a disability. Before I share my personal case with you, I would like to point some facts about the social life of youngsters who suffer from this condition. Do you think that young ladies, they can have boyfriends, they go out on Saturday evening, they stay out late, wake up on Sunday to face a day, and on Monday they go back to work? No, they cannot. And we had cases where they did have boyfriends, and he left them. And to make matters worse, when they do feel good and they feel like going out, they are restricted in doing so because they don't have the money. For a young lady, a normal lady, it's the norm of the day to go to a hairdresser once a week or once every 2 weeks, to pamper herself, to buy clothes and other things to feel good. Do you think that youngsters suffering from this condition, they can do this? No, they cannot. They cannot. Because of this quality of life, their self-esteem is very low, and their dignity is down there, because they cannot have a normal life like others. In some cases, parents can help financially. In other cases, they cannot, which will bring me to my case, which I'm going to share with you and most probably half of Malta. In early October, I was diagnosed with cancer in the pancreas. On the 6th October, I was operated. I had half of the pancreas removed, part of my stomach, gallbladder, and some glands. Before all this happened, I used to host students and had a part-time job on Saturday morning to help the financial difficulties at home. I was a breadwinner. This is my second time in life that I had to be a breadwinner. Because I was put on chemo for 6 months, I was advised not to host families, students, or I could not keep my part-time job on Saturday morning because I could not have contact, because I don't know where they were coming from. They could have an infection. So because of all this, my daughter and I had to live on my pension. From 1st October, when it happened to December, we had to live on 439 euros every 4 weeks. And from January to up to this date, because my pension was increased, we are passing on 469. Taking into consideration the medicine that my daughter suffers from this condition and I have to have, but sometimes we have to do without because we can't afford it. I have to take a lot of measures to try and make ends meet. Putting my ego and my dignity aside, I'm not shy to say that, for example, at home, if I have two chandeliers, I remove the bulbs from there and left one. Sometimes I like to relax, because I do have my problems as well, in my backyard, do some gardening. I would like to buy some plants. You say, well, come on, some plants. But sometimes I restrict myself from buying even a 1 euro plant, because it can go towards milk or towards something else. I have faith that through this Parliament session, there will be more awareness on this condition and that the government will accept them as a disability. I hope that our plea will not slip through the net once again. I would like some of the members here of Parliament to put yourself in the shoes of one of these people that suffer from this condition. Do you think that you can work the same way you are doing? Do you think, no way, I mean, you will wake up in the morning, you don't have the energy to do what, not even half of the things that you do. It is like you are working on a supercharger and they are working on a low battery. That is how it is. There are so many things, but I didn't, that I said. There were other more restrictions that I had to do at home, but obviously it was already too much for me to share all this when half of Malta is listening to it. Maybe in some way that the government can help, if he can get some doctors from abroad, where they are working on this. As far as I know, once I read that Australia is doing a lot of work on it, and lately in Israel. And I think we have quite good relation with Israel. If he can get a speaker about this, and he talks to doctors, people who are in this, so he can understand more the position we are in. In the beginning of the year, our Prime Minister, in Marsa Shlok, said that the sick wants a solution today, not in 10 years' time. How true that quote was. And I would like them to be aware of our situation, because in some cases, for example, like ours, tomorrow may be too late. Thank you very much for listening to me. I hope the message got through. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mrs. Camilleri, for explaining clearly the financial and the physical difficulties. Yes, yes. And it's right that you mentioned Israel and Australia, because we also have the friendship group between the two parliaments, so your idea will be moved from my side. Now I call Ms. Ruth De Bono. She's a working mother, to share her experience.
Thank you once again. From a young age, this is a personal experience. From a young age, I suffered with pain, which they called growing up pains. My legs and my arms used to hurt me a lot, and then I was told that I was an empath and that I cared deeply for others, which isn't necessarily a wrong thing. But they blamed my migraines and my constant headaches on that. So they gave me very strong antidepressants, which my father categorically refused to allow me to take. I was only 15. So I was suggested, always by the medical professionals, to stop studying, as it was impeding my health and that I was too sensitive for my surroundings. As I grew older, I knew I tried so hard to be like the rest, but I knew deep down that I was not. Despite my efforts at athletics, I ran the 800-meter races, I did the long jump and the high jump, I always ended up exhausted and in so much pain. Many times I fainted due to the exertion. I danced and I acted, and it was the best time of my life, but I still knew I was different. My limb pains and my migraines persisted into adulthood. Then came marriage and childbirth, and there my life was hit by lightning. After my first childbirth, I suffered postnatal depression, and my fibromyalgia symptoms started to progress. I was the happiest and proudest mother on earth, yet my pain and my exhaustion made me feel like I'm not good to be a mother. My second childbirth landed me into a cord prolapse emergency caesarean, where my child was even declared dead, but thank God he's alive and well now. It left me shattered with all that happened during labor, at childbirth, and also for the consecutive 4 years where my baby had to endure an open heart surgery and a nephrectomy and other operations, which thank God today he's alive and kicking, but it left my body in shatters. Since that trauma, my fibromyalgia symptoms, still yet undiagnosed, rendered me incapable of taking care of my two kids, even though that the pain I had somehow grown accustomed to. It was still unbearable. I have different kinds of pain, sometimes sharp spikes of electricity around my body, leaving me tearful and exhausted for most of my day, or it is dull, constant, and cuts deep down into the muscle, leaving me to gasp for air. It never leaves my body. It's always there. When I got diagnosed in 2004, I got the tests done, and those around me could finally believe that it was not all in my head. Since at the time, it was little to none heard of. It took me nearly 20 years to get diagnosed. When I go to work, I spend some time to hide behind my makeup. I put a mask, which I put daily to hide my tiredness. I put on a smile, which although I do gladly, it is many times suffered, as I feel I can't keep up with this act for too long. I am tired, and I know my body is breaking down. I can go back home after 5 or more hours of work and continue with my day as a normal mother, a wife, would. I need to rest to gather enough energy for the morrow, hoping that the next day I would manage again to fool society, that I am healthy and I'm okay. The question I read the most, Mr. Speaker, is how are you today? I ask myself each time I hear this question, truly, what do you want me to tell you? So I end up telling them, I'm okay.
Many times when I explain my symptoms, I'm encountered with questioned looks and smirks from those who seem not to believe my ailments. Why am I mentioning all this? Isn't my story the same as that of other men and women who have gone through similar ordeals? Yes, maybe. However, the body manifests traumas in very different ways. I am lucky to say I have fibromyalgia. Others get cancer, others depression, others death. So I've been told many times, I'm lucky not to have cancer. We are all warriors. I am not saying this to diminish or compare cancer to fibromyalgia and ME. I'm going through this ordeal right now with a family member, so I know what it is. Pain must never be compared. We all suffer differently. It is worth mentioning that I have multiple chemical sensitivity, so I cannot take any pain relief due to allergies. It is not easy to live with an invisible disability, day in, day out, 24 hours in pain. But I ask anyone here, sufferers, what gets most to us is the constant exhaustion, the cognitive impairment, and the disability it brings with it. No, it is not psychological. It is physiological. It is true, and it is not all in the mind, as some health professional still to this day states that fibromyalgia and ME are. I am talking about fibromyalgia because I suffer from it. But we, as an alliance, are also representing ME sufferers who are unheard of, especially here in Malta. The numbers are few. However, we should still hear their voices. We should still hear their cries. I want to mention the many times I felt neglected by my loved ones because they took me for granted. Because I'm a woman, they assumed that I have to do certain chores at home and have dinner, albeit my health didn't allow me to. I want to mention also the many times I refused to have people over because my house is not in order, since I cannot afford home help and I don't have the energy to clean it. Yet, because I am a woman, I am expected to do this and much more. I want to mention the many women who are expected to fill their partner's sexual needs, are forced and coerced, abused and beaten or threatened as their body was too weak to do anything but sleep. I also here want to mention male sufferers who, although are less by far than women, still suffer greatly from these two debilitating illnesses. There is no specific gender nowadays and who the breadwinner is. Still, both are expected to work to keep up appearances and to not talk about their illness. Why? Because we look well. We don't look sick, so we fall through the cracks. We are ignored by those who do dare not look deep into our eyes, as they are afraid to see. The mirror to our soul, and there within, they will see the hurt and the pain that we are all living in. Whoever said we are lazy and we are a lamenting bunch who prefer to do nothing, I dare them today to come and exchange a day with me, so I'll be back to full health, even if at least for one day. I dream of the day when I will get a resemblance of who I was 30 years ago and get back to taking care of my family. Both conditions progress with age, and therefore, as time goes by, our health continues to deteriorate unless it is given the proper treatment. I dream of the day where I can go to sleep and my body allows me to actually do that. I can't remember the last time I had a good night's sleep. It does not exist. Pain haunts you day and night. This is not a tragic script made by Shakespeare. No, this is my life, our life, the life which I am asking you today to consider helping. My life and that of the other persons I, as an alliance advocate, for, together with board members Rebecca and with Maria, please, I beg you to hear our plea for help. We need proper health care, proper medication, including natural therapies. We need home help, social security benefits, and we need you to consider giving some of our dignity back by considering our illness as disabling. We ask you to make a change in our lives. Thank you all for coming today. In the name of my fellow colleagues and the members, we augur that this session serves as a continuance of what we have already started to work on 5 years ago. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Dabono, for your very strong message and also for being the champion in the launching of this important alliance, Fibromyalgia Alliance Malta, and also for being pivotal in organizing this important conference here at the Maltese Parliament. Now we'll start with the members of Parliament and from both sides, and I call now the Honourable Maria De Guara. You have the floor.
Honourable Speaker, allow me first of all to congratulate you personally for accepting to host such an important session as today's, aimed at raising awareness amongst the general public about invisible disabilities. I would also like to extend a warm welcome to both the local and foreign speakers attending, and to thank them for their readiness to share their knowledge with us about invisible disabilities. Many are unfortunately still not aware that there exists a number of debilitating medical conditions and illnesses which, in spite of their serious nature, are not readily recognizable nor clinically obvious. In spite of this, they can still cause severe discomfort, pains, loss of self-esteem, and a reduction in the quality of life of the individuals concerned and their families. It is because of this, and because we practice what we preach, that we as legislators have the duty to raise awareness, legislate and create programs meant to help such patients reduce their burdens. The success of such programs depends directly on how early we are capable of detecting such conditions. It is well documented that the earlier we detect them, and the earlier we can intervene through appropriate means, the greater the rate of success. There are a number of debilitating conditions which vary in severity and incidence. Some are common, while others are rare. The Maltese have rightly gained an enviable reputation as a caring society. A truly caring and inclusive society strives not only to preach solidarity with the less fortunate amongst us, but more importantly, tries to address the needs of every person, preferably on an individual basis. For this to happen, the public has to first and foremost be made aware of the existence of such diseases. We should consider ourselves fortunate that as a developed country, we believe that every person who suffers from any type of disease, illness or disability has the right to receive the highest level of medical care possible. It is laudable that in spite of ideological differences between the two major political parties, successive governments have always put health and social services high on their political agenda. One must also give due recognition to the number of NGOs that work hand in hand with the health authorities in providing care and in safeguarding the rights of patients. Among the disabilities whose incidence is increasing globally, we find fibromyalgia, myalgic encephalomyelitis referred to as ME, and chronic fatigue syndrome known as the CFS. Irrespective of the great advances in medicine, we still have no concrete evidence as to what causes them and why some individuals and not others are affected. Hence, at this stage, we are as yet unable to prevent them or treat them successfully. However, we can still do our utmost to alleviate the suffering they cause. These conditions can equally affect all ages and both sexes. Typically, the three conditions we are highlighting involve the nervous and immunological systems, and they usually present with a gradual and progressive loss of energy, a feeling of unexplained tiredness, somnolence, associated depression, lassitude, and unaccounted for physical exhaustion. Also common are multiple widespread muscle spasms and muscle pains. These symptoms do not produce any obvious clinical signs, and a general physical examination, especially in the early stages of the disease, is unable to confirm or clinch a diagnosis with certainty. If one is not aware that these pathologies do exist, one could easily be led to believe that these complaints are being made up. Many a time, the sufferers are unfairly labelled as being malingerers and lazy, and with not much interest in putting in a day's work. But it is not only the public that needs to be made aware that these conditions do exist. The curriculum for the medical undergraduates should include at least a number of assignments about such conditions to make early detection and intervention possible. The same applies to employers, teachers, and job recruiting agencies. I would like in this regard to make some suggestions as to how we can help these patients. As these are chronic conditions, it was only fair that the authorities had positively considered including them under Schedule 5 entitlement scheme, which would make such patients eligible for those medicines used specifically for the treatment of this condition. Certainly, the drugs available in the schedule should be updated from time to time and according to one's need. Just a few weeks ago, Parliament legislated the use of marijuana for medicinal use. Considering the high cost that taking marijuana entails, government should consider to at least subsidize this treatment in confirmed severe cases. Again, it would be appropriate to consider extending the special identity card to these patients. Extending the present allocation of home help and carers would be another step to help enable these patients to live more independently rather than seeking recovery and institutionalization. The Commission for Disabled Persons should also consider issuing the blue badge and the reserved parking badge to those who suffer from such conditions, as they would definitely benefit from it. As the severity of symptoms gradually fluctuates, chronic sufferers should be allowed flexi-time at their place of work and teleworking so that they will be able to work from home. For the most extreme cases, we, as legislators, should start discussing how these can also be entitled for the disability pensions. All these proposed measures would allow these patients to recover their self-esteem and help encourage them to return to being gainfully employed. Ultimately, those who cannot continue to live independently rightly expect to be guaranteed recovery in a residence, purposely catering for their specific needs. In this respect, government has shown the way quite recently by making the right decision to subsidize a private initiative which should serve as a model for things yet to come. We therefore support and applaud today's initiative, which should not only serve to raise awareness, but I am certain will help all key players coordinate their efforts and research to alleviate the suffering of those less fortunate than we are. Once again, thank you for sharing your experiences with us. Thank you to all of you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Maria Daguara. Now I call from the government side, Member of Parliament, Honourable Salvino Agresti. You've got the floor.
Thank you. Honourable Mr. Speaker, Honourable Deputy Prime Minister, Honourable colleagues, Members of Parliament, colleagues in the medical profession, Professor Bevan, participants and guests. We have heard in the last 2 hours how important it is for us to discuss and create more awareness on the issues related to the problems of people who suffer in silence when they feel excluded in our society, even though in many cases their disability is not visible. Although we heard a lot about two common conditions of invisible disabilities, that is, myalgic encephalopathy and fibromyalgia, we know that there are many more hidden disabilities that occasionally create social exclusion in our society. These include psychiatric disabilities that include depression, bipolar disorder, schizophrenia, anxiety disorder, traumatic brain injury, epilepsy, HIV, AIDS, chronic fatigue syndrome, cystic fibrosis, and many others. Some conditions may occur for a short term, others are chronic. Some conditions are unpredictable and fluctuate while being controlled by medication. We also know that there are some hidden disabilities which are also untreatable. All this brings with it a huge responsibility for us legislators to ensure that we have no stone unturned to enlighten the burden of these sufferers of any type of disabilities by enacting the appropriate legislation to facilitate the social inclusion of these people in our society. A milestone has been reached just a few weeks ago in this legislature when we agreed on the legal framework for administering of medical cannabis by the medical profession. There are surely many more measures that we can take, not only to offer the best treatment to sufferers of invisible disabilities, but also to ensure that no employer, whether in the public service or the private sector, excludes persons with these conditions from employment opportunities or from enjoying the right conditions at their place of work. Experts in this field believe that there is still a lot of work to be done in raising awareness about invisible disabilities, as many times society's barriers are disabling people. It is being suggested that organizations, companies, and the public service should try to develop a culture where staff feel safe confiding in their employer about their particular medical condition. It is being recommended that a health and well-being policy is adopted as many organizations as possible so that employees who suffer of any invisible disability will know how to access support for their condition. To offer inclusion to persons suffering of invisible disabilities, we must help them realize that they should not suffer in silence, but come forward and find all the support they need to carry on with their lives in the best possible way. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable Grishti. Now I call Honourable Robert Abela from the government side.
Can I have the... Mr. Speaker, distinguished guests. Mr. Speaker, yesterday, as you well know, I gave you a call in the evening and informed you that I was sick with fever and feeling...
I confirm that.
...and feeling very unwell. And that...
Hope you are better today.
I am indeed. And that most probably I wouldn't be able to make it today. I could feel that you were surprised, as indeed I didn't sound sick, almost as if you were not believing me. That brief call on the eve of this discussion was indeed a wake-up call to me on how it must feel to suffer in silence from ME, to suffer from the extreme tiredness, the chronic pain brought about by fibromyalgia, the ongoing physical challenges, which can also affect your emotional health, which will make it hard to carry out everyday activities without other people fully understanding or even believing what pain and suffering one is going through. I have to admit that I am not very conversant on this subject. This is a disadvantage, as we are here debating a technical aspect, technical medical conditions. But this limited knowledge can, on the other hand, also be an advantage, as it helps one to understand better how the common man in the street understands these conditions, how one relates to, or rather fails to understand, the issues relative to people suffering from invisible disabilities. Unfortunately, people often judge others by what they see and conclude that a person can or cannot do something by the way they look. I strongly believe that this dialogue has to be approached with empathy, by placing oneself in the position of those sufferers of these conditions, and by understanding that every person has a purpose, a value in life, a uniqueness in life, notwithstanding and no matter what hurdles they may face in their physical condition, and that invisible disabilities are indeed very real and do exist. Also, that we all should learn to listen with our ears instead of judging with our eyes. That is the reason to define invisible disabilities. The question then arises as to how to bring about social inclusion, or rather full inclusion, of invisible disabilities. Social inclusion being the entitlement of equal rights to all people and groups in society, such as the right to employment and to education, and to adequate healthcare. The abilities of a society to include all of its citizens and addressing their differences to ensure their full participation in society, and that they have equal and unfettered access to society's full resources and all resources. And whilst impairments do indeed cause pain and suffering and discomfort, what really disables people as members of our society is a system which does not recognize their right to equality, to genuine equality. We, as members of this parliament, have a duty to remove the barriers to participation, the barriers to inequality. As a government, we have the duty to invest in unlocking the vast potential of people suffering from all forms of disability, to give the chance to people suffering from invisible disabilities the right to shine, by giving better access to medication and therapy, including alternative therapy, to improve the quality of life, by eliminating bureaucracy. As a government, I believe that we have come a long way in addressing the needs of people suffering from invisible disabilities. As my colleague Dr. Grishte has quite rightly mentioned, the recent legislation allowing the use of medical cannabis, of cannabis-derived products for medical purposes, allowing, amongst others, fibromyalgia relief, was a positive step, a step in the right direction, notwithstanding the insensitivity, and I do not want to be political in today's forum, showed by the nationalist part of the opposition by voting against this law. Mr. Speaker, I know I am not allowed much time today, but I believe I have discussed the generality of the issues at hand, but I would like to conclude on one principle. Let us not judge that we cannot see. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Honorable Robert Abela. I now call the Parliament Secretary, Anthony Angelis, who is the Parliament Secretary for Disabilities and Active Aging.
With your permission, Mr. Speaker, I would like to stay sit as a way of solidarity with those who spoke before me. Mr. Speaker, Mr. Bono, Deputy Prime Minister, colleagues, Professor Benvan, it was an honour and a privilege for me to be here today. Too many important topics and issues were mentioned, and I am sure that we need to keep on discussing and keep on exploring all the issues mentioned here today. I just want to thank all those who had the guts and came forward and opened up with us this very sensitive and important issues. As an overview of what we are doing up to this date, I am going to mention different situations that we are working in, and by doing so I'm going to mention a list of things that we took on board during these last few years. In this budget, we saw an increase in the allocation of the disability sector, an increase of about 4.5 million euros. And for the first time in the Maltese history, the total allocation for this sector is of 20 million euros. But what does this really mean? It means that we can continue making a difference in the lives of people with disability and their families. More services in the community for persons with disability, and because of the money allocated, are being provided. As part of Project Società Giusta, we also inaugurated the 10 residences in the community for persons with disability. These residences illustrate both vision and the commitment of this government to move forward the concept of independent living. This will also foster the inclusion of persons with disability within the community and contribute towards their active participation in the daily life of the said community. Regarding the issue of inclusive employment, we launched the INC project, a person-focused inclusion project. This is a three-year project worth approximately 3.5 million euros and partially funded by the European Union through the European Social Fund. It is aimed to maximize the abilities of persons with disability with the goal of boosting their inclusion in the labor market and strengthen their social engagement. Through the creation of this project, the Parliamentary Secretariat for Persons with Disability and Active Aging aims to continue promoting social inclusion, and by encouraging independence, a positive work experience, and improvement in the quality of life. Although this is all of great importance, I can understand that there is still the need to keep on working further towards making more of a difference in this sector. And we are aware that one of our next challenges, one that will also have an impact on the lives of persons with disability who are fibromyalgia sufferers. It is through reform of the local disability assistance system in connection with the social security allowance. Back in 2014, we saw an increase in the disability children's allowance. Moreover, in order to encourage persons with disability in the labor market, persons with disability started benefiting from full pension, and their disability is according to the scheme of the social security law, even if they are in employment. For the first time, persons with amputee also benefited from disability allowance. However, we understand that there are still cases of persons with disability who cannot participate in the labor market. For these persons, an increase severe disability assistant was established. To assess these cases, a multidisciplinary board was set up. The Bartel Index started being used in order to assess the disability of these persons. At first, the persons benefit from these assistants had to be scored from 0 to 4 in the Bartel Index. However, to make a more just system, in the last budget of 2018, it was held that the persons who will be benefit from the assistant will be those scoring from 0 to 8 of the Bartel Index. Hence, there was an increase in the Bartel Index. We are also exploring other methods of assessing, because we know that the Bartel Index has a lot of limitations and we don't want to exclude anybody. And by doing so, we want to reach the hidden conditions and intellectual disabilities that we know that the BARTEL is not covering. So we want to explore other tools, and we are exploring other tools that we can start using so that more people will be included and will be helped. As proposed, as a proposal of our electoral manifesto, is to consider the introduction of disability allowance for hidden conditions. At present, discussions are taking place between the Ministry of Family, Children's Rights and Social Solidarity and the Health Minister, and the Parliamentary Secretariat for Persons with Disability and Active Aging is Neil to participate and contribute to this process in the interest of those persons with particular health conditions such as fibromyalgia. At present, the necessary information is being gathered in order to be able to process accordingly after this stage and in line with the best practice and Malta's obligation under the UN Convention for the Right of Persons with Disability, the ethos of which is the slogan, "Nothing about us, without us." Relevant stakeholders such as patient groups will also be consulted and be part of the process that we have to carry forward. Together, we will make the right decisions which will make the difference in our lives. Hidden conditions such as various and give us the sensitive scenario, it is important to take the necessary steps to make the difference in the lives of the persons, while at the same time being cautious in order to eliminate any other and possible abuse. Hence, let's work together to ameliorate the situation of persons with disability who suffers from hidden conditions, and together create a system that really works, and in doing so, continue affirming Malta commitment to the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals, the slogan of which is "Leave no one behind." Thank you very much.
Thank you. Parliament Secretary Anthony Azzelichelis. Now I call the main spokesman for opposition with regards to health, Honourable Stephen Spiteri.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, for again accepting an invitation to discuss such important health issues that are affecting our society. And I want to thank also all the participants who discussed their experiences, and I assure you that we are taking note of what was said inside this Parliament. When we talk about disability, we refer commonly to physical, mental, or intellectual forms, depending on their effect on the individual. The symptoms and signs in such cases are obvious even without the clinical skills. In contrast, today we are discussing three conditions, fibromyalgia, ME, and CFS, where the physical signs are most often than not absent, hidden, or as we are labeling today, invisible. Invisible as they may seem, these disabilities are not invisible to the person suffering from the condition, to the families who are taking care, and to those who are closely involved, friends and carers. In fact, the people close by have to take on the difficult journey from a very early stage in the lives of these patients. I do refer to these people as patients, as I strongly believe that they are suffering from a disorder, an illness, a disability. Throughout my medical profession, I met quite a lot of these people suffering from any of the above conditions. And this alone merits the diagnosis, and I am convinced that they are suffering from such illnesses. Diagnosing these conditions is not an easy task or a straightforward task, even at a specialist level. The symptoms can be vague, at times strange, and most often associated with psychological disturbances. The latter related to the changes the conditions discussed impose on the lifestyle of the individuals affected. The pre-diagnosing stage presents differently in different individuals, and this further creates problems and difficulties in addressing the conditions. I assure you, the path from here is no easy task for the patient, his or her family, and those who are taking care. It is a path of uncertainty and of great emotional challenges. This alone is a cry for help. And one of the aims why we are here today is this cry from the patients, their families, those who spoke in this parliament. I assure you that we are taking note of the Fibromyalgia Alliance Malta, the NGO who is taking this task to work thoroughly through this pain which the sufferers are passing through. We are going to assure you that your mission will have our support. Keep strong. We are here all behind you for the good cause. When we start discussing social inclusion, the first step must be acceptance. Accepting these disabling conditions would mean extending the definition of persons with disabilities. Accepting or acceptance relates also from a medical point of view, from a social aspect, and from the political perspective. All these three together can push the agenda forward and eventually reach our targets. Greater awareness is needed in our society. I assure you, it hurts when a patient affected by any of the conditions discussed finds himself surrounded by closed doors, even sometimes from the medical team. Diagnosis is no easy task. The invisible aspect surrounds the clinical examination and the medical investigations. These patients pass through multiple times. The doctor, the physician, may at times discredit the symptoms these people are experiencing. The sudden changes in their daily lives, the loss of social interaction, difficulties with daily needs and activities, the loss of time management, all present huge challenges. We need to learn more to help these patients. I emphasize the need for greater awareness, even amongst the professions, including the teaching and the medical professions. It is a priority that one must be aware, acknowledge the situation, be prepared, and have the necessary skills to help the lives of these individuals. A multidisciplinary approach is needed. This is crucial when it comes to inclusion, as it will help in the participation. Yes, these people need to continue participating in society. Inclusion is not enough. We need to step forward to participate. Our goal is not only to acknowledge the disability, but to enable sufferers to adapt and participate. Acceptance, inclusion, and participation are the triad for a way forward. A better educational system providing an opportunity to everyone, including these patients, should be high on our agenda. In Malta, we are proud in reaching the top when it comes to inclusion of students with various forms of disabilities, enabling them to advance in life. Does this apply to students who are suffering from these invisible disabilities? Students who suddenly find themselves haunted with difficulties related to their medical conditions needed an adequate support. Support must start by recognizing and extending the definition of persons with disability. This will guarantee a better success. Support includes the provision of household help in certain cases. By recognizing the disabilities, may also entitle these individuals to such services as the Blue Badge, as many of you have suggested. Social support in terms of benefits must also be acknowledged and set up for these cases, especially when the disability overrides the capabilities of the individual to support him or herself. Financial support will address some of the burden these families pass through. Most of these patients have undergone, I can recall myself, a long history of medical consultations, medical treatments, alternative therapies, etc. All the costs, all this costs a lot of money. Some patients become so disabled they cannot continue to work, or even so, never found the opportunity to start work due to their condition. Before concluding, I would like to point some specific points related to these invisible disabilities. The setting up of the fibromyalgia clinic, which functions with a holistic approach, specifically run by experts in the field, medical specialists, mainly rheumatologists, occupational therapists, physiotherapists, psychologists, and social workers. This will greatly improve the lives of the sufferers. I would also like to share some points discussed at an interview with a 27-year-old ME sufferer who was struck by the illness 10 years ago when still a student doing her A-levels, a very smart, intelligent, athletic young lady who suddenly saw her life breaking down. Today, she is trying to cope, supported by her family, but her cry for better support is always there. Here are the points she suggested. In employment, people with ME often struggle to find employment because most employers will not see past the condition and are not willing to offer reduced hours or work from home. In education, following classes via Skype could be most helpful when students with ME are not well enough to attend classes in person. This was done successfully for me when studying my degree at MCAST. I never missed a class because the administrators understood my needs and did their best to keep me included via technology. Unfortunately, not all educational institutions would be willing to take such steps. In healthcare, GPs are often the first professionals that persons experiencing the first symptoms of ME turn to. It's important that GPs can recognize the first symptoms and know how to properly refer patients to the necessary service or specialists. Specialists, neurologists or rheumatologists, should keep updated on the latest research and good practices related to ME. A more holistic approach to caring for patients with ME is also necessary, as at times all the different symptoms are treated by different specialists with very little coordination between the different specialties. Social care. Access to all social services is limited for persons with ME. There is also a need for emergency social care, for example, when primary carers for persons with ME are hospitalized or need to go abroad urgently. There is no governmental service that can offer immediate short-term support at home for persons with ME. In conclusion, Mr. Speaker, let us all work together at a national level, making awareness a priority, inclusion and participation a must. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you, Honourable Stephen Spiteri. Now I call the Honourable Deputy Prime Minister, Minister of Health, Honourable Chris Fenn.
Grazie, Sir President. Et n-nota li kwaħat eċet kellem bil-Inglis. Għana bil-parlam, għalli għan kunx.
Fil-bidu eċċaġa bil-Malti.
Ekku, la għalli eċċaġa bil-Malti. So I'll change to English. Ruth, thank you for being here. And Mr. Speaker, I have to congratulate you for the second time in 2 days. You have organized an extraordinary session of Parliament, which is an extremely important occasion. I think we should do this more often. I don't think we do it often enough, because this is an important way of bringing not just Parliament to the people, but the people to Parliament, which I think is an important thing. With regards to fibromyalgia and associated conditions, this is particularly important because even now, but certainly up to a few years ago, the medical profession especially, and I speak as a doctor of 30 years standing, Stephen and Salvino, slightly younger than me, even though Salvino looks older, but slightly younger than me. The medical profession, even up to now, tends to base its diagnosis and its treatment on what it can see and what it can measure, on what it can record. And I repeat, even up to now, there is still reluctance within the medical profession to treat patients with these conditions seriously. And there is still reluctance. And therefore, it is extremely important that we are discussing this at such an important forum, because, again, we are bringing to the fore the sufferers onto the national agenda. Now, I have to say that there is a risk, and we are starting to see this to a small extent, of going the other way, of from being at a stage where nobody would recognize or would admit that fibromyalgia actually existed, to going to the other extreme, and this is equally dangerous for patients with fibromyalgia, of diagnosing everybody with back pain or with feeling tired or with similar symptoms as having fibromyalgia. Overdiagnosis is, I repeat, as dangerous as underdiagnosing it, because it will flood the system, it will render treatments as ineffective, because if somebody isn't really suffering from fibromyalgia or a related condition, then obviously the results of treatment will not be effective. And therefore, I think it is very important that we stick to set criteria. And I think this is where the scientific world is now going and where the medical world is now going, in defining better what constitutes fibromyalgia, what are the points of one needs to reach to be able to get a diagnosis of fibromyalgia, and of course the related conditions, and then offering treatment on a scientific basis. I think we've had a number of breakthroughs in this country with regards to these conditions. The first one, I believe, was in 2014, when the health service recognized fibromyalgia officially as a disease. And this was 4 years ago, and still we are still one of the few national health services that do recognize fibromyalgia as a disease. There are a lot of health services around the world which still do not believe or recognize fibromyalgia as a condition. And then, having recognized it, of course, we included it as one of the chronic diseases from which patients can benefit on the Schedule 5, on the national security and chronic illness conditions. And patients with fibromyalgia are, of course, entitled to free medication. Now, I recognize that the government formulary list is not exclusive, it's not exhaustive, and there are possibly other medicines to include on the list. But this is a process which we are going through. Likewise, and Stephen mentioned this, we have, I think this was in 2015, set up a fibromyalgia clinic, specifically run for fibromyalgia patients. Again, the service is very well subscribed, and I'm sure, as with a lot of other services, we can continue to provide an increase in the service in this clinic. But the service is there, and it's a milestone, I think, in the treatment of these conditions. Likewise, pain clinic, which sees about 3,500, 3,700 patients a year, is also an important consideration. My colleagues mentioned the new legislation that we have in this parliament, that we've approved in this parliament a few weeks ago, regarding the use of cannabis for medical purposes. Of course, legislation on its own is not enough. We need to have the actual products, and I am pleased to be able to announce today that we have a number of importers who are in the process of importing this medicine. And I can say that at least in one case, at very, very, very affordable prices. So we are facilitating the process because obviously there's the need for things to go through proper channels. And the plan is that in a few weeks we will have the medical marijuana product on the local markets at very affordable prices, which means that patients who feel, obviously through the counsel of the doctors, that they can benefit from these products will be able to do so in a safe, easy and affordable manner. Mr. Speaker, again, I have to congratulate you on today's session. I listened to a lot of it over the radio because I was in my office doing other work. But I assure you that not just the government MPs, but I'm sure all the MPs in this parliament are even more aware of the situation today. I know Ruth always keeps us busy, so that is that's a good sign. And again, you have our commitment to continue to work on this condition, to increase the services and to make life for patients with these conditions as bearable as possible. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honourable Deputy Prime Minister. I want to thank you all of you, for this very important and successful conference on social inclusion of invisible disabilities. I mean, we have heard experiences from here. We heard the proposals. We listened carefully to the political views of both sides of the chamber here. And I think this is a unique conference, and I hope that we will have a follow-up. What I intend to do is, with your permission, I will personally take the initiative to transcribe all the speeches and initiatives, interventions from all of you, and publish it in a parliamentary publication. And I make sure to send you one, Professor Bevan, and also I send you a copy, Mrs. Macri. And I want to thank you all. I'm sure that this conference is also an example for other European countries to follow this initiative and make sure also that now we follow up also the actions that need to be taken as an action plan, as the Minister just stated and also the main spokesman from the opposition. Thank you very much. And I invite you now for a group photo, in order to have also a memory of this important conference. Thank you very much.